Tonight's topic is practicing with a smile. When I go to retreats, part of my practice is service. So I volunteer for the little yogi jobs that they have. And one of them, which scared the daylights out of me the first time I did it, I had to really think about whether I could do it, was sitting in the front of Spirit Rocks Hall with 80 to 100 people out there watching the time and ringing the bell when it was over. That's all that's involved, except there I am with my ego up in front of all of these people who, you know, I think are really watching to see if I do it right. You know, is my posture good, all of that. So I'm so concerned about how they are perceiving me. And finally, 35 minutes into the 45-minute sit, I open my eyes and I very mindfully start to look around the room. And it was a stunner. It looked like they were all suffering so much. They must have been even more absorbed in their own stuff than I was in mine. I don't really know what was going on out there, but it was a revelation to me, the extent to which some people, when they're meditating, look like they're having a really awful time. And then a little while later, a teacher who I sat with for several retreats emphasized how important it was in her practice to smile when she sat. And I was glad to have her mention that, because at first she looked a little peculiar. We're not used to seeing people just sit and look like they're having a good time. But she did. And, you know, I had an opportunity to talk with her, and I could tell that she did. She really enjoyed her practice. I think I've come to understand this over the years, and I have to give a lot of credit to the bird bath that I have in my backyard. It's a garden back there. Most of the yard is in decorative plants. And at one end of it is bird bath on a pile of bricks. It gets a lot of business. And over the years, you know, I sit and I do my work and I look out, and I've gotten to know the flocks that will come at different times of day to have their turn taking their bath. And it's very important. Their feathers don't work right if they don't keep them clean. So every bird in the neighborhood wants a piece of my bird bath. And I love watching their interactions and the personalities that come across. In every flock, the biggest bird gets to go first. And it's a he, and he'll get in there and he'll just throw as much of the water out of the bird bath as possible. So then I've got to wait till the whole flock has used what's left before I can go out and add some water to the bird bath. But while the big guy is in there making a mess, all of the other birds are waiting. And you'd think, don't worry, I'm going to get back to the subject, but you'd think that they're waiting patiently, but they're not. You can almost see them with their towel over their wing and the cake of soap in their hand, and it's my turn. Isn't it my turn yet? And they're hopping from branch to branch, kind of buzzing whoever is in the bird bath at this point. It's a hoot. It's really funny to watch these guys. And it's just like meditating, because I don't take the birds personally. It's not serious to me. it might be serious to them, but you know, there's a pane of glass and several yards of ground cover between me and them. There's no reason for me to be attached to what's going on with the birds. And pretty much the same is true with my thoughts. They just come and go like the birds. They have their time. There's a time of day for me to feel like, oh, I'm inadequate. You know, it comes through, it spends its time in the bird bath, and then it takes off. There's a time of day for me to think, I'm doing everything so well, this is a terrific day. And there's no reason for me to get attached to it. It's going to come, it's going to go. Doesn't have anything to do with me, really, any more than the birds do. So if I bear that in mind, I can have a good time. Just like my teacher, Tara Brock. I can see, that's kind of funny. These thoughts that are coming up in my head, they make no sense at all. And they're not me. That's really the important part to remember. So I do have some thoughts on the topic, which I jotted down. I guess I mentioned the part about dark thoughts. And I've had occasion for the past many months to have a lot of them. But what I really like is those moments when I'm practicing with just daily life, you know, my chores. And I'll notice, like the birds flying through my head, doing their little things. Sometimes my thoughts are so ridiculous that I'll just burst out laughing. I'm washing the dishes and I'm cracking up. My wife thinks I'm nuts. She's probably right, but here's a sequence that went through my head not long ago. In fact, this may have happened while I was sitting in meditation. And I have to say that I don't really distinguish the practice that I do in sitting meditation and the mindful participation that I have in my own life during the day. It's the same approach to just watching, not being attached, just watching and seeing what happens. So here's what happened. Someone had done something that I didn't like. And so I had a little grudge. And it was just sitting in the back of my mind. Anytime I wasn't particularly happy about things, it would come up. And so I was doing some chore that I didn't enjoy, and the grudge came up. And I noticed it. And I said, oh, I wish I didn't have that thought. Maybe I didn't really. Well, no, I did. But I had good reason to. Well, no, I. And finally, I saw what I was doing, and I just cracked up. The moment that I was able to have some humor about what my mind was up to, I had that distance. I had that pane of glass and the yards of greenery between me and this silly little grudge. And I can't to this day remember what it is. But, you know, it came and it went, and it's gone. When I was 15 years old, which you can probably imagine was a while ago, I wrote this poem. It's called The Natives. One day I got awfully curious. This was, by the way, long before I had any idea that I was going to meditate one day. I got awfully curious, so I asked myself, "Listen, hey, what are you doing in there to me?" And I answered myself that I'd better mind my own business. But if I promised not to touch anything breakable, I'd let me come down someday and watch the operation. So in a little while, I got down and took a look around, and actually, I was surprised. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but it was really pretty nice. Tastefully done. It didn't all go as smoothly as I'd like. I mean, there were skips and jars between intents and executions. But I was pleased to find the natives a basically personable lot. This is what I find over and over, even when I'm being the angry, grudge-carrying. I mean, it's not me. It's just thoughts, it's moods, it's states of mind. I don't know where the me is in the middle of all that, but they come and go. So when I take it lightly, I give permission for the thoughts that I don't really want to own to reveal themselves, so that I can understand my mind better. I can see how it works, and I'm in a better position to let it go if it's causing me suffering, and to nourish it if it's making me happy. And as I mentioned a little while ago, I've had a number of real-life challenges to deal with. Recently, I was sitting in a doctor's office, and I've had a couple of problems with growths on my skin, one that was on my shin, and it had to be removed, and it was nasty because it's really just skin and bone, literally. So it left a wound, large wound, that took a long time to heal. And no sooner had it closed than something else grew there. And I went to see the dermatologist, and he was starting to talk about radiation and skin grafts and stuff like that. And I could really feel my whole body not liking where the conversation was going. And at first, I was just, you know, I wasn't taking it personally. I wasn't getting into the fear of it. And just saying, well, I really appreciate your being straightforward with me. I want the facts. I want the facts like a brick on the head. But, you know, gotta know in order to cope with it. And then, you know, I knew that over the next 24 to 48 hours, it was going to sink in. And so fortunately, you know, biopsy right then, and got the results. And I was not yet in a state of complete terror when the biopsy came back and it was completely benign. So regardless of the result, being able to watch my mind and get a little space, and I don't know that you can prepare yourself for really awful things. They're going to be awful no matter what, but there's a way that it's easier to go through them if you're on a birdbath kind of basis with things like fear or grief. Or I guess what I was struggling with then was feeling sorry for myself. It's like, darn, I've been through it once and now I got to go through it all over again. In odd situations we can still enjoy ourselves. I had a wonderful time on Friday meeting with my tax guy. Because ultimately, like the dermatologist, he had good news for me, and he's a really nice guy. And I liked the chair that I was sitting in, and I was rolling around the office in it, and it was very comfortable, and I was relaxed. I didn't have to do the taxes anymore. I didn't know yet what the result was going to be, but I knew I was in good hands. Before our hour was over, he had noticed that one of the things that I reported was income from teaching meditation at Insight Meditation Center. And he said, oh, that's cool. Before the end of the hour, we were doing a practice review for him. And he has a really good practice, so that was a lot of fun. So as I said before the meditation began, even if the mind is full of fear and grief and self-pity, whatever it is, anger, hatred, it's still possible to practice with a smile. Even if you can't find the fun of being with the tax guy, you can just turn the corners of your mouth up. And the odd thing is that it does have a mind-body connection, and it improves the mood a lot more than sitting there scowling, which I know is our natural inclination. I mean, that's what I discovered when I was being the timekeeper at Spirit Rock, was that, the faces that we get into sometimes. Before I became a teacher, I was having a chat with someone in an early sangha about being happy, that the goal was happiness. And this person said, well, life's not all about being happy. But it is. At least as far as Buddhist practice is concerned. The Dalai Lama wrote a book called The Art of Happiness, which basically is what he said Buddhist practice is about. In one of my first roles as a teacher, I was working with people struggling with addiction and their feelings of unworthiness. And I made this point that you have a right to be happy. And I thought about it for another moment and added, in fact, you have a duty to be happy. Because when you think about it, the people who make others miserable are the ones who are unhappy themselves. Happy people tend to just naturally be friendly and helpful and generous. And it's not because they think they should be. They're just naturally inclined to be. And that way it's much better for everyone. Because have you ever been helped by somebody who didn't really want to do it? Yeah. When we meditate, what we're doing is making friends with our minds. We're getting to know them. And if we're lucky in that process, we can enjoy the humor of how our minds work. As we relax, and humor helps a lot with that, and let our minds reveal themselves, we start to feel love for what goes on in the mind. The way I'm very fond of the birds in my neighborhood. Awareness of our inner environment begins to grow. And we love ourselves more as we take ourselves less personally. It seems like a contradiction, but that's how it works. If we have just a little space, then we can have a relationship. And it can become a good one. We can become friends with our minds. So all of this happens simultaneously, back and forth. Good times, bad times, happy mind, troubled mind. Just like as we sit and meditate, we just keep coming back. Just keep coming back over and over. Come back to the bird bath. Watch the splashing. Rumi says, your grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to where you're bravely working. Expecting the worst, you look, and instead, here's the joyful face you've been wanting to see. Your hand opens and closes and opens and closes. If it were always a fist or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence in every small contracting and expanding, the two as beautifully balanced and coordinated as bird wings. So I have been through a time of grief and fear, and it's been a while. But I've kept practicing, and my habit of smiling whenever I can remember to, and enjoying just the rest and recreation of meditation help me inch back into balance between the fist and the outstretched hand. And I've regained most of my sense of humor, and I think more importantly my confidence in myself and in my practice. And that's what motivated me, this coming back into a kind of balance, to pick this topic for tonight. And the best part of smiling during our practice is that it builds on itself. The contented mind relaxes and sees more clearly. And in doing so, it grows in wisdom. This in turn steadies and focuses the mind. And gradually, happiness in concentration becomes bliss, which allows for even more clarity and wisdom to grow. So I invite you right now to give yourself permission to be happy. Give it a try. Just close your eyes for a moment. Relax. Authorize your own happiness. Did it make you smile? Great. There you go. But even if not, just keep reminding yourself you have the right to be happy. Thank you.